Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary is Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Rockfin, Odyssey, Band.video, Vigilante.tv, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thank you so much. We know you have a lot of options out there. You can connect with me through the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com, or you can find me on Twitter at Macroaggression. Thank you to our sponsors that make this show possible. Chemical Free Body has been with us since the beginning. They are making the best vitamin supplements out there. They're actually making products that work, which is amazing. I've been on the Green 85 juice drink every morning for 3 years. I'm not going to stop. It works well. It helps me. I don't eat enough vegetables. I feel like it kind of helps to offset that. But the detox bundle is something that I think people should consider. It'll really lean you out. I've done that 2 years ago. I did it and I had to buy all new shorts because they didn't fit afterwards. It's very powerful. Gut detox, toxin detox, ultra enzymes, probiotics, and then a couple canisters of Green 85 will get you going. So if it's something you're interested in, if you finally decided that this is the year you take control of your health and that nobody else is coming to save you, then go to chemicalfreebody.com, use the promo code MACRO, save yourself a little bit of money. Also, thank you to Legal Shield. They have been in business for 50 years. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, and they are available in the United States and Canada. It's the collective buying power. All of us little people directed at a high-powered law firm in your area gives you access to attorneys on average 22 years of experience. So you're not going to get somebody fresh out of law school. These people can help you with a variety of things, legal documents. If you need a will and testament, power of attorney, medical directive, anything like that, sign up for Legal Shield, get over there and knock that out in the first month or so. Their program is very reasonable. It's $30 a month. It's a dollar a day to get access to an attorney, a good attorney too, not just some, you know, nobody that you've never heard of, but somebody in your area that knows your region and can help you out with what you need. So if you are running a small business, they have a small business plan for that. If you need Identity Shield, they have that. If you carry a gun, they have paperwork for things along those lines as well. So there's quite a bit going on over there. I like the idea of us leveling the playing field. That's why I chose the domain name www.don'tgetpushedaround.com. That will take you to our personalized Legal Shield website where you can take a look, read up. There's a lot to see over there. And I suggest people go over there and just see if it's right for you. If you think it's something you would be interested in, then pull the trigger on it. They tell us we have equal justice under the law, but I don't think anybody really believes that if they're paying attention. We know that the people that have high-powered attorneys have things go their way more so than others, and it's time to sort of level that playing field. So Legal Shield provides that for us, www.don'tgetpushedaround.com. This one's going to be fun, but it's going to be a tough topic. So I am very interested to get into this with author of Drugs as a Weapon Against Us and also the director of a fantastic documentary that I just got done watching called Shots, Eugenics to Pandemics. John Potash is here. Hey, John. Good to see you. How are you?
Good. It's good to be with you, Charlie.
Well, both of your book, your movie, right up my alley. You know, I mean, I love all of this stuff. I mean, when you're talking about CIA, you're talking about, the LSD component, and you're talking about opium wars and all that in the books and how that's used to finance and fuel these illegal wars all over the world. That's right in my wheelhouse. I'm always fascinated with that. Also, the way you tied in the pop culture of Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, Kurt Cobain, Wu-Tang Clan, all these groups here that we sort of grew up with or knowing about or loving. I was in college. I was a freshman in college when Nirvana was on the scene. You know, it was like the music that drove my college life. You know, it's the soundtrack to my college life. And to find out that there's more to that story about Kurt Cobain, you know, than most people know, I love that. But recently, I've been all over the topic of eugenics and this British Eugenics Society and the Roadhouse or the Round Table from the Cecil Rhodes and all of that whole side. And I watched your documentary and you got it all in there. I mean, you really went back and covered it. And I think that was so smart because people are trying to do COVID documentaries without recognizing that in order to understand COVID, you really need to go back like 100 years. And people go, oh God, am I going to have to do all this research? No, luckily John did it for you. But you really need to go back 100 years to understand the plan and then move forward coming through. And then once you do that, you get to COVID and you go, oh, it all makes sense now, right? So how'd you even start on this documentary? Because as I was watching it, it's dense, man. There's so much information. I kind of was watching it like, boy, I don't even know where you'd even begin on this. So what was the process for making that film like for you?
Well, it was a strange process because I was writing a comic version, kind of like a comic sequel almost, but really just a comic version of Drugs as Weapons Against Us, the CIA war on musicians and activists. That was my film based on the book of this, you know, basically the same name. And so as I was getting along with it and I was getting towards the end, COVID hit. And so I basically just started seeing some corruption around COVID. And, you know, it was all such a bizarre, tyrannical situation we were living through. And I say tyrannical because at first I thought, what, you know, there's this incredible virus and we have to stay indoors and, you know, okay, maybe. All right. I already know the tyranny that this, you know, our government can impose upon us by the way they did it with, you know, in terms of killing, you know, in my Drugs as Weapons Against Us history, I cover how they murderously targeted the Black Panthers. They murderously targeted the Students for a Democratic Society, which was the largest, anti-war movement during the Vietnam War. And then they targeted anti-war movements, you know, of today, you know, against the Iraq War and the kind of, activist groups such as, you know, the one that talked about the 99% so much, and all. And just so they were targeting people up to my Drugs as Weapons Against Us book kind of comes up to, time I finished writing it around 2013, even 2014 or 15, even. And so it came out in 2015 and, you know, it was published then. And then I turned into a film, you know, in 2018. But I felt like this same tyranny is happening with COVID. Something, you know, is not right with it all. And then there was so much censorship about anyone trying to print some stuff about why are we locked down? Why are the schools closed? Why are businesses closed? Why we have wear masks? And so, for example, a guy, Alex Berenson, started writing about it for Amazon pamphlets he was sending out. And he worked 11 years for the New York Times as a reporter for the New York Times. And he came out with these pamphlets about it all. And then other doctors started blowing the whistle on some of this stuff. And Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s group, Children's Health Defense, started really publishing lots of information on this and putting out lots of videos and lots of interesting articles about what's happening with all this and how it doesn't make sense. So I started loading some of that into the end of my film, Drugs as Weapons Against Us, the kind of sequel, comic sequel. And I started loading more and more as I found out more and more information until I realized I just have to get rid of everything from Drugs as Weapons Against the except the eugenics stuff. I had the eugenics stuff in there as part of the Drugs as Weapons, against this book and film, but I just expanded it for this film. And, Edwin Black covers the American eugenics incredibly well in his book, War Against the Weak. And he was won many awards as a Chicago Tribune syndicated columnist. And he was, he just did the definitive work, I would say, on eugenics movement in the United States leading up to the Holocaust, World War II and the German Holocaust against the Jews and the Gypsies and the communists and all. And, he wrote another book. This most famous book is probably IBM and the Holocaust. He's written several other, one or two other books about that era and then wrote more books, but his books have been translated into dozens of different languages and just, sold, incredibly large amounts around the world, except they're not as known in the United States. And, that eugenics just fit in so well into the shots, theme, into the whole COVID corruption theme. And so I came to find that, yes, there's just so much evidence that doctors, officials, everyone's being bribed by these oligarchs, the same oligarchical families that started this, crazy eugenics idea in the early 1900s. The fact that, they're so incredibly prejudiced, the fact that they thought that, the wealthy white Anglo-Saxon Protestants were, the superior race and everyone else basically was inferior and needed to be done away with 10% at a time. People of color, 90% inferior, Jews, 60% inferior, Catholics, close to, 40 or 50% inferior. It's just incredible. The poor inferior, genetically, they were saying genetically inferior, it's absurd. Paupers, genetically inferior, people laid on paying fines, genetically inferior, and they all need to be done away with. It's just so absurd. It's almost comical, but it was actually, they passed laws in over 30 states in the country. And this came out when, even NBC's, Rock Center covered this and said some of those laws stayed on the books until the 1970s and even the early 1980s, against blacks, and all. It's just, so they were sterilizing and eliminating huge, huge amounts of people. We'll never know exactly how many. I'm sure they covered up a lot of it. But what they would do is they would have these, supposed IQ tests, which only, ask questions about wealthy people's activities. Like at that time, tennis and bowling were only for the wealthy. And so, and different other things that immigrants didn't really know about, and the generally the poor classes didn't know about. So the army, majority of the army failed the IQ test and were called inferior, but they disregarded that. But basically, they just sent people that they said were inferior to, special centers, public institutions where they fed them tubercular milk from tubercular cows that killed almost half of them. They were, they were sterilized. Their babies were, terminated, were killed when they were born. They had a film called The Black Stork, which was basically the biggest, most highly promoted film and the best-selling film for over a decade. And people took it seriously that these people should be eliminated. You know, that's what they promoted in that film, that doctors should eliminate these people. And, you know, it was top doctors even talking about this stuff. And even the Supreme Court backed the eugenics movement until Hitler gave it a bad name, you know. And so during the World War II, same eugenics families, the Rockefellers, the J.P. Morgans, and all of them funded German eugenics, because German was totally left, bereft after World War I. And so here comes this huge amount of money poured in by American oligarchs. And here it uprises German eugenics. And even, Brown Brothers Harriman was found guilty for the Trading with the Enemies Act. And, Prescott Bush was president of Brown Brothers Harriman. The Harriman parties for the Harriman American Railroad tycoon. Brown Brothers were the largest private bank at the time. They actually are out of Alexander Brown, out of Baltimore, which is my hometown where I live now. And so it was just this mass of, fount of wealth and these oligarchical families that were involved in all that. But then I found were also involved in the corruption around COVID. And so J.P. Morgan can be found on the board of, the board of directors of, Moderna, And so Moderna had never, of course, had a vaccine authorized before the pandemic. Pfizer had, ended up with the largest corruption scandal before the pandemic. And so this is just some of the massive corruption I found and some of what was going on with all this that I had to cover for, around the coronavirus.
Yeah, it seemed like it was everywhere. It was kind of hard to deny the reality that there was manipulation going on. But I think that a lot of us that, my first book came out in 2017, and I went pretty hard against the big pharma. Yeah. So I had an advantage that I think of some people that were just new to this didn't have, which was I knew the pharmaceutical industry was run by convicted felons. I knew what they were up to. I knew they were no good. I knew the vaccines were no pre-COVID, but the MMR and the history of vaccination, and I knew about all that. So when COVID came and they started to roll this out, and I go, no, we know who these people are. This is the wrong group. But you go back and you take a look at 100 years ago at Rockefeller Institute for Medical Research, right? So can you talk a little bit about that, about how they started their vaccine program in World War I and what that might have actually, what the Spanish flu, what this might have actually been instead of what we're told?
Sure. So what happened was during World War I, first thing, war itself is a great opportunity for eugenics. So a mass amount of money went into pushing Truman to push for America to get involved in this war from the start. And it was a huge propaganda campaign to get Americans on board with how America had to be involved in this war all the way across in Europe. That was the start. But then you got, so that I think was a eugenics push itself. But then when Americans started going to war, these oligarchical interests, the Harrimans, the Rockefellers, the J.P. Morgan families, they had already been behind the allopathic medicine push, which was against all the naturopathic and homeopathic and other forms of medicine, which were actually more popular in the 1800s before the allopathic medicine started. And they were pushing, Rockefeller was pushing his pharmaceutical-based, his oil-based medicines, his oil-based drugs and all. But the Rockefeller Institute basically pushed for these experimental vaccines to be used on all these soldiers, pretending like they needed them, really a dozen to two dozen, pretending they needed them in order to, evade these all these foreign exotic viruses in other countries. That was just a ploy. It was really just testing these things on them to see, what would happen to them. And they proceeded to start dying on the spot, in a lot of cases at Fort Riley. And so PBS did covered it, and they called the Spanish flu the so-called Spanish flu because they knew it didn't start in Spain. They said the first cases started at Fort Riley. And what was happening in Fort Riley, of course, they were all getting, you know, injected with these experimental vaccines. And so there was a woman journalist at the time who then became a scientist. And she was, I believe she was just a teenager, actually, when it first started. But then she became a journalist and then a scientist. And she basically covered the fact that, you know, she showed the military journals that were covering how many people were dying from these experimental vaccines. There was a masses of people were dying from these experimental vaccines. And these families, these wealthy families in America, were so wealthy, they also owned banks in foreign countries, in England and Germany and in other European countries. So they pushed these vaccines in those countries also. So soldiers were dying in a number of different countries from the start. They were getting sick, getting vaccine sickness, and you know, eventually dying. And then after World War I, they were left with a huge surplus of vaccines. And they said, okay, well, we gotta push these. We gotta do something with these. So we'll pretend like this is, you know, the civilians have to watch out for what all these soldiers came back, you know, from the war, because the war had ended. What they came back with, these, they have to watch out for these viruses they came back with. And so they pushed these, you know, dozen to two dozen, you know, experimental vaccines on the civilian population and caused masses of deaths, you know, in the civilian population. And so I show, you know, a number of whistleblowers, a number of documents, you know, just backing this idea. There's actually films out there that even show whole lot more just about this issue itself.
It's a big deal. It goes against the narrative that Spanish flu just came out of Spain, and who could have expected this? And we did the best we could, and we tried to prevent it, and all the things that we're told. When in actuality, we understand that there's something else going on. But it didn't really, obviously, it didn't stop after World War I. With America being involved in creating the wars, oligarchs benefiting from them financially, consolidation of power, all these things. We now get into World War II, and we start to see the same oligarch companies make an appearance in World War II on both sides of the equation. General Electric, General Motors, IBM, you already mentioned Brown Brothers Harriman. These groups out there that sort of were playing both sides of the war. And you know, like you said, when discovered with Prescott Bush, he should have rightly been hanged for what he was doing. But I think he wasn't, because he was in charge of the USO, if I recall correctly. And I think they thought that would be bad PR if we hanged the guy that was in charge of that.
Yeah. I think it was actually, you're thinking of their lawyer, maybe a charge of, you mean the precursor to the CIA?
Yeah.
So that was what's his name? His name leaves me all of a sudden. But it was Alan Dulles who was in charge of the U.S. intelligence of that time. And that was, you know, the intelligence during the war that turned into the CIA. Now, they were actually keeping some of their best, you know, chemicals and their best products from the United States, believe it or not, and giving them to the Germans. They were giving some of their best products to the Germans and keeping them from the U.S. military. So I don't even know if they were playing both sides of the war so much. I think they were playing more on the German side more, you know, as crazy as that sounds. But Edwin Black documents it very well. Standard Oil was keeping things from, you know, the U.S. military and was you know, really criticized for that. And so there was just so many American companies involved. Ford Motors was involved, you know, as I say, Standard Oil. And you know, the Rockefellers and J.P. Morgan interests actually combined with the I.G. Farben, who ran a whole the whole Auschwitz concentration camp, which was like dozens of camps in one. It was just this massive city of concentration camps, and so this is what was going on. So it was eugenics 3.0. You know, you could say, I mean, it was just hyper eugenics. It was just carrying it out in the millions, you know, with, you know, very fast. And they were, you know, these eugenics folks were just couldn't stop, you know, lauding Hitler's Germany before the war, how they were just taking it, fast tracking eugenics, you know, before the war. So But after Russia basically defeated Germany, because that's what it really was, you know, despite how historians try to, you know, frame it, you know, if you look at Oliver Stone's film, one, you know, relooking at history with an American university history professor who wrote it with him, you see that the kind of the Americans and the English, basically, I mean, you can see it in any history book, American English together lost less than 1 million people during World War II, whereas the Soviet Union lost between 20 and 30 million people. You know, so that with those were the numbers. And so the Soviet Union really defeated Germany, and the American and British barely had any troops on the you know, the Western Front against Germany. It was, you know, it was basically Germans against the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union defeated them in Stalingrad, and here comes America into the war, you know, supposedly against the allied Japan. And even though, you know, the people say, a lot of historians say, we knew Pearl Harbor was going to happen and we let it happen. And, you know, just to get into the war late. And we also knew what that Japan at the end of the war wanted to, you know, give up, wanted to just stop fighting. And we still, after bombing them once with a nuclear bomb, we bombed them a second time, you know, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So it was really eugenics continued, I believe. And yeah. So eugenics really never stopped. It just went kind of underground. And going underground, it was still trying to find new ways to accomplish its goals, but with new means. And so obviously the nuclear bombings were part of it. But then after that, it was perpetual war after World War II. You know, we had the Korean War where we tested biological, you know, agents on Korea. And then we had the great vaccine push also around that time, which was a worrisome, you know. It was just, it's hard to know if these vaccines, how much they worked, what they were really doing. And you come to find, and it came out in a lot of, you know, peer-reviewed articles, that there was a cancer-causing virus, you know, a monkey virus in the first, you know, vaccines, Salk vaccines against polio. And, you know, a woman tried to blow the whistle on that, Beatrice Eady, and she was silenced. She, you know, the government said she was not allowed to speak publicly after she tried to blow the whistle on it. And it took some years for them finally to stop. It was basically the this monkey virus that caused cancer, simian virus.
SV40,
right?
Yeah.
Lasted until about 1963, I believe. It was in those vaccines. You know, some of the vaccine companies actually did recall their vaccines, but others didn't. And millions of people got this SV40, that, and there was a rash of cancers later in life for those people that got, you know, in that age group.
Yeah. It's crazy. What's really fascinating to me is the way history is sold to us in America. Because if you just go by the textbooks, Hitler invented the concept of eugenics, depopulation, all this. It didn't exist before him. He's a bad guy and he did all this. And then you start to dig into the reality of this, and you find that the British Roundtable and those guys there, British Eugenics Society, they had this idea going in the late 1800s, probably even before that, but really sort of brought, you know, sort of became a topic of discussion in the late 1800s, early 1900s. That concept gets exported to America, gets picked up by Margaret Sanger and her group, and she starts writing about it and talking about it and becoming very popular.
I think Sanger was a little more, she was part of it all for sure, but I think it was really picked up more by the Rockefellers, JP Morgan interests and all them, and Sanger was just part of the group, you know.
Yeah.
But I hear you about, you know, but the only problem with Sanger is that, yeah, she was definitely part of it all. And who knows what she's doing, but what her group ended up doing over the long run. I like to think they changed, because I do believe in reproductive rights for women, but we just don't know for sure. I do know though that America ran with it. England couldn't run with it because their population, the way their society was set up, they couldn't run with it. America could.
Yeah. And they did. And they got it legalized in all these states. And really, you look at that and you go, wait a second. Wait, this was not only was it allowed, it was legalized. Right. And then you start to kind of piece back together and you look and you say, well, the Germans actually kind of used that as the justification, either the testing ground or they've legalized it there in Indiana and California and all these states. There's about 17 or 18 states, whatever number of states that had it legalized. And that became part of the justification. Not that really the Nazi party needed in the end any sort of approval from people to do what they wanted to do, but as a form of selling it to the German people early on to get rid of the feeble-minded, and that term, was very vague, and that encompassed, I think what people don't realize about the Germans during World War II or the lead up to World War II, it's like that eugenics program was first used on the Germans, before it was gypsies and Jews and Slavs and whatnot. It was their own population. It's like, listen, if we're building this the Third Reich that's going to last 1,000 years, we can't have all these feeble-minded people here bringing us down. We're going to have to thin the herd.
People with epilepsy, people with addictions, all these different people.
Right. And then you get the Charles Davenport component, right? The socially unfit, and you go, well, what does that mean? It's like, well, like you said, people that are late on their payments. So it goes British eugenics, it goes from Britain to the US to Germany, then back to the US in the form of paperclip, I would say. Not that I'd ever really left the US, but still reinforced back with paperclip scientists that come along and they go,
people that don't know, that's Project Paperclip, that where the CIA brought in loads of Nazi scientists into the United States, and under other operations, they sent loads of Nazis down to South America to run things down there and to start the cocaine trafficking routes from South America to the US.
That that's very convenient too, right? That they had them. Listen, I mean, the spoils of war, right? America parachutes into the tail end of World War II, and then takes half of the, takes the scientists that they want on their way out, and I guess Russia did the same, right? Did Russia? Is there ever any evidence of Russia exporting this? Or I guess importing into Russia this eugenics ideology, or were they already just like, hey, we just lost 30 million people, we don't need any more?
Yeah, eugenics. I never heard they did, so I just don't know. I never heard or read evidence they did. Did they use some German scientists or German intellectuals? Maybe, I don't know. Maybe in East Germany, I really don't know. It's possible though, but I do know that America and Britain did in a big way, and America in particular put the head of Nazi intelligence, or the guy named Galen, like he inserted him back in power in West Germany to run intelligence in West Germany, and then to keep a whole huge network of Nazis running intelligence in West Germany for good. So, and then Galen's legacy kept running things too. So they had a huge apparatus in Germany, and they were running all kinds of MK Ultra programs in Germany, like all kinds of ghastly experiments that American scientists kind of were blowing the whistle on. A guy named Olson, who got murdered, talked about that, how that really was the most thing that led him to want to quit Fort Detrick, in 1952, when he was murdered after he was dosed with acid, LSD.
Yeah. John, do you think a case can be made that the Third Reich never really went away? It just rebranded itself in different form and fashion, and that maybe we're seeing the Fourth Reich in the form of the Fourth Industrial Revolution coming out of the World Economic Forum and these groups?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, people have already documented how Klaus Schwab is from a German industrial family that made huge money off the World War II and was also Nazis, and Schwab is was put as the head of the World Economic Forum that was pushing all this ghastly stuff, all this ugly stuff. But I think Bill Gates, as I said in my film, Bill Gates was really this guy, basically blew the whistle on I think it was German or some kind of European TV, when some European TV show, program interviewed this guy from IBM, a high up executive in IBM. And he said he thinks Bill Gates doesn't have any brains or creativity. He was just an opportunist. His mother was friends with the head of IBM, the CEO, and head of IBM said, all right, I'll take your, you know, kid out of the garage eating pizza and you drinking soda. And he sent over 900, you know, IBM workers to take Bill Gates, prop him up with a company. So it was obviously just an IBM offshoot front company, you know, just pretending they had nothing to do with it, but they did. They started and ran and put him as a puppet figurehead, you know, of the company. And so he had to do their bidding for life. And so first, you know, he didn't make a lot of money, but also just, you know, like stealing, like kind of privatizing all kinds of software, which was being given for free out around Silicon Valley in the, at the time, you know, in the 70s, according to this executive from IBM. And, you know, he privatized it and he made huge money off it. He had all kinds of corrupt practices to make huge money off of it, but it was really all backed by IBM. And then he pretends to retire and just get into philanthropy, but he doubles his money while he's in philanthropy because he's incredibly invested in all these, you know, him, Microsoft, IBM, whoever, they're all invested. All these oligarchs were invested heavily in the pharmaceutical industry. And you know that from your research, I bet. But, and just, you know, made huge money off of pushing vaccines, supposedly for philanthropic reasons around the world. But these vaccines had sterilizing agents in them. These vaccines were causing massive, like, you know, 500,000 kids in India to be paralyzed. And it's just causing, you know, massive problems all over the world. The sterilizing agents were in vaccines he was pushing in all kinds of third world countries and even in developed countries too, even.
Seems like they ran out of good ideas when it came to origin stories, when you get the Mark Zuckerberg appearance, because he also was a freshman Harvard dorm room starting a transformational software company with technology that may or may not have been his, probably InQtel from the CIA, starts this new company, takes it public, makes billions of dollars, starts the Chan Zuckerberg Trust, starts to give philanthropy, right? And so now he starts to get investigated for antitrust by the government, you know, same. It's like almost the identical story. Please don't break us up.
Story.
Yeah. Yeah. So
yeah, that sounds really similar. I didn't know his story so well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's either that or it's, we started a transformational software company out of a garage in Palo Alto, right? Where you get the Googles and the Hewlett Packards and Apple and all these, and, you know, so it's like, it's either one or the other. And when you dig into right. who's financing it, you go, I don't know about this. It seems like maybe right. these guys were made to succeed. Let's stay on Gates Foundation for a second here. Now he's, he has been busted in Africa. I mean, he's the second largest donor to the World Health Organization. The World Health Organization was busted putting sterilants in the tetanus vaccine, antigens that made women infertile. They denied it at first and then had to later admit that they had been doing it, not just doing it once, but had been doing it for a decade, and not just in Kenya, but also in various countries around the world. There is a pattern of covert sterilization. And you might be excused if you think that this is an accident or something. And then you come across the Kissinger 74 Memorandum 200 in which he states outright that our policy towards that of the third world should be of depopulation. And then you go, okay, well, this isn't an accident, right? This is being made to happen. And in that memo, he says, what we'll do to the leaders of these countries in order to give them plausible deniability and make sure they don't get hanged is that we'll say, it won't be up to them necessarily. We'll do the work through NGOs. And that now, you know, and of course in 74, when the memo was written, there was no Gates Foundation. But knowing what we know about what Kissinger's policy was, knowing what we know about the World Health Organization and seeing the Gates Foundation, are they just following Kissinger's policy?
Yeah, it's just all the same policy. You can just go in a line from, you know, eugenics all the way up to now that in that way. Yeah, I think they are following Kissinger's similar policy. It's just the same thing redone. And back then, after Kissinger, after Nixon was out, I mean, I guess Kissinger might have even still been in the government. I can't remember. But you had Rockefeller as the vice president, Ford as the puppet president. And they pushed this, you know, massive vaccine campaign over something that caused some problems, and they reneged it. But after, you know, about 45 million Americans already got that vaccine, and they pulled it because a few hundred were getting Guillain-Barré syndrome. and some were dying. And so they pulled it. And of course, you know, with the COVID vaccines, tens of thousands were getting all kinds developing all kinds of problems from the very start, and thousands were dying in just in the first, you know, month or two. And they didn't pull it, of course. And now we know, you know, it's many tens of thousands have died, if not hundreds of thousands. According to the government's only, you know, reporting system, the vaccine adverse event reporting system. But yeah, no, I definitely think it's, that the Rockefellers and, you know, Vice President Rockefeller and President Ford were doing the same thing, and they're still doing the same thing today with the depopulation. Sure.
Yeah. So we move into 2019. October 2019, specifically New York City, the Event 201 pandemic simulation, 6 months before the actual event takes place. We have Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Johns Hopkins is there, CIA, Chinese CIA, media, of course. I mean, they run through a scenario, not necessarily in secret. I mean, it's filmed, people can watch it. They run through a scenario in which a theoretical coronavirus outbreak starts to sweep the globe. 65 million people die. The only solution is vaccines, right? And then miraculously, almost as if it was scheduled, 6 months later, it starts to play out like this. So you know, it opens up this really big rabbit hole where you start to say, okay, if this is coordinated, it would, you know, if this is a conspiracy, it would require all of these groups to be involved in it. And it's like, okay, well, it is a conspiracy and all these groups are involved in it. How do you suppose that process works for getting everybody on board with the plan in advance of it? And I would say that COVID was, you know, a success in some, by their standards, a success in some ways, and then the wheels fell off in others, you know, but again, they, lights, camera, action. Like in March of 2020, they started the show and we got a chance to see it. How do you think that they were able to coordinate that? And what sort of planning does something like that require?
Well, a lot of practice is what I would say, because what they did is they actually had simulations almost every year for about at least 10 to 15 years, according to Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s excellent book, The Real Anthony Fauci. He actually covered the same similar, you know, Event 201 kinds of simulations for many years that in the 2000s. And the Rockefeller, I could just cover the Rockefeller Report and Event 201, but he covered a number of different simulations that were happening. And so they practiced and practiced and practiced with how they're going to present it with the media. They practiced, you know, because you know, I have to show in there, of course, how the oligarchs came to own you. You had six multinational corporations controlling over 90% of our information, according to Senators Bernie Sanders and that Washington senator. I have my film, his name I forget. But, you know, many, you know, Ben Bagdicky and the former dean of Berkeley School of Journalism wrote The Media Monopoly and, you know, analyzed the media and, you know, came out with how the media is so incredibly controlled this way by six multinational corporations. And so they could do it with the media, so they can do it with the, you know, the information that they controlled and that we rely on for what we think is the truth. They could do it with so much, you know, so many government officials paid off. The CDC, you know, Bill Gates was the largest donor to the CDC, the Center for Disease Control. They could do it with the massive amounts of money they have in academic institutions and the way pharmaceutical companies control, you know, academia, in the sense that, you know, this Harvard, you know, lecturer who used to be head of the New England Journal of Medicine, you know, this Harvard professor basically said, you know, Harvard Medical School professor said that all the New England Journal of Medicine and all the medical journals are basically controlled by the pharmaceutical companies. Sometimes the pharmaceutical companies write up the articles. They only fund, you know, groups that will come out with positive, you know, lab tests and experiments on the number of these different, you know, pharmaceutical drugs and vaccines. And so that's the way they could cover up that aspect of things. And so that's what we were stuck with. And these government officials, of course, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Talked about the findings. He had discovered that basically Anthony Fauci had been, he controls billions of dollars. Fauci, he gives them out, he doles them out to tons of scientists around the country, and then can manipulate them that way. And he gets tons of money from the pharmaceutical industry, and including the billions of dollars. But he also his staff, each member of his staff at NIAID, National Institute for Allergic Disease, whatever, gets $150,000 each of royalties off the Moderna vaccine alone. And so they're paid off. So this is just some of the ways it works to, control information and to present a rosy picture of these dangerous vaccines.
Let's stay with Moderna here for a second, because they've got connections that are very suspicious to me. First of all, they've got Stefan Bancel, their CEO, becoming a World Economic Forum Young Global Leader in 2011. Why? They've brought no products to market. Everything that they brought has failed. What made them think that this guy was a success story when his company, the track record, had failed? Right now, so that it makes me suspicious. They've got a relationship with DARPA, automatic disqualification there. And then they've got a relationship with
the Defense Advanced Research Program, whatever.
Yeah. So they've got that relationship. And then they've got a relationship with the aforementioned IBM to do digital health tags. So what is Moderna?
And remember, IBM set up the whole tattoo computers for the Holocaust. Okay. Yes.
They had practice. They know how to do health tags.
Really good at eugenics, at systematizing eugenics and extermination of millions.
Yeah. So they all decided that DARPA, World Economic Forum, and IBM all decided that this one company, Moderna, is very important to them. I wonder why that is.
Yeah. And then the U.S. government gives $1 billion to Moderna, who had never come out with a vaccine before. Never had a vaccine passed, at least passed authorization, gives them $1 billion to come up with a COVID vaccine. So, yeah, it's incredible. Yeah. So, obviously, it's all part of it. It's all part of the eugenics movement. And it's an attempt to depopulate. And during COVID itself, the amount of people of color, I mean, it was really for blacks. I understated it in my film, and I shouldn't have. Basically, I said, over six times as many Latinos and middle-aged Latinos and black men died. But for blacks, it was actually over 10 times as much. And for Latinos, it was over six times as much. I just thought the numbers were so high. I almost didn't even believe them. I just didn't know what to say. I didn't know if people would believe them. But it was just incredible numbers of people of color were basically exterminated during this. And I say exterminated, not because okay, COVID may have done something. I don't know. But when they got into the hospitals at places like Elmhurst, you had nurse whistleblowers saying, they're killing people here. They're not. These people, some of these people aren't testing positive for COVID even, and they're being put on respirators where they're being killed. In the studies of the whole New York health system said, 88% of the people that were put on respirators died. And, my wife knows medicine because she's a veterinarian and studied how respirators work. And what happens is you have to have a serious expert watching it at all times, or else it's going to kill the patient. And they don't have enough people that are serious respiratory experts to be able to do that. And it does kill patients. It did kill patients. And even patients that didn't even need to be on these respirators because they didn't even come out as COVID positive. They were just in a panic because they were so scared about getting COVID because the frenzy, whipped up by the media about it all. And so they were killing people. And they were also giving them remdesivir. That was the standard drug. You go into the hospital, you get on a respirator, which is an 80% chance of killing you. And then you go on remdesivir, which is got over a 50% chance of killing you because it kills your I believe it's your kidneys. in the experiments when, you know, you try and remdesivir in the past. So nurses got to calling it run death is near. Okay. Remdesivir, you know, they called it run death is near because it was killing so many patients with the remdesivir. And that's the only drug that's allowed to be used on patients for, you know, for COVID. And so I didn't even get to put that in my film, but, you know, it's just unbelievable what they were doing. And so they were incentivizing hospitals to call people COVID patients because they would get some just $15,000 or $20,000 more just for calling them COVID patients. And then they would get an extra $40,000 for each patient they put on a respirator. And so they were monetarily incentivized to do these things for everybody and kill them, you know, and sadly enough, you know, end in their death. So whether all these doctors knew putting them on a respirator would kill them or not, I don't know. But somebody knew because of the money coming in. I mean, obviously the person giving all that money for it likely knew what they were doing to do that, you know.
Yeah, it makes me think back to when the eugenics movement started in the United States, definitely targeted towards Black people,
people of color in general.
People of color, yeah. They eventually moved on to the Catholics because they have a lot of kids and they wanted to kind of, or at least Margaret Sanger said, I hate the Catholics, but it had always been people of color. Then you see your numbers, right? It's six times more, 10 times more for the Black community. And we understand the evolution of eugenics, getting into the genetics of people and the ties to groups, I don't know, like the Wellcome Trust in the UK and these groups that are really focused on the genetic component of it. My question is, I wonder if, and I don't know if you'll have the answer, it might cause you to speculate a little bit, but it seemed like it could have been gene targeted, like a targeted weapon directed specifically at those race groups. You think that's possible?
Yeah, it does appear that it was because of people of color being more vitamin D deficient. Black people in particular are more vitamin D deficient, and vitamin D is a real real immune booster. And I do think it did. And they said they wondered why there was so few deaths in African countries and in India and all that compared to the United States. And so, you know, there's a great there's a lot of evidence that vitamin D did help with this, and that but they tried not to let anyone know that you know vitamin D helped your immune system against this, particularly people of color such as the Black community. And so yeah, I do think it was targeted that way. Yeah, and it was manufactured that way and targeted that way. Look, it was Anthony Fauci that funded the research at the Wuhan lab, and that's coming out in more and more places. And so, and then, you know, it leaked, you know, the idea that leaked from the Wuhan lab is getting more and more accepted, but really a leak, or was it just pushed, you know, was it pushed out into the community? I mean, this was done, you know, Nicholson Baker, who found all these government documents that under the program Baseless, which was a government program to use biological weapons and chemical weapons. He found that this was done before. This was done, you know, they supposedly leaked, you know, all kinds of, you know, viruses in China and Russia previously in the 90s and early 2000s. So this was done before, but this version of it was just, you know, more intense and more lethal.
I'm curious to know your thoughts, because there's this sort of overlap as we get into the new rebranding of eugenics as transhumanism, right? That the World Economic Forum says that they want a fourth industrial revolution. And what that is the blending of man with machine into what is known as transhumanism. You go back to 57, you have Julian Huxley, a former head of the British Eugenics Society, coining the term transhumanism. It feels like a rebranding of eugenics, just called by a different name, maybe giving it a little bit more of a science fiction feel to it. Do you see that as sort of the next step, the next evolution in the eugenics movement, this pivot towards transhumanism?
Well, I don't get into this idea as much in my film, except for the part where a pharmaceutical insider Karen Kingston found the ingredients to some of these mRNA vaccines, and this hydrogel included graphene oxide, and found that. And so I found articles supporting that that graphene oxide can combine magnetically in the body, like to form, and it can form like electrical kind of circuits. It can be it can tap into and be connected to, you know, circuits, to kind of things outside the body, and, you know, electronically, these graphene oxide, you know, particles as they combine in the body magnetically. And that's why there was a rash of people finding that they felt magnetized where metal things could stick to them after taking the vaccine. And so I found a number of articles supporting that. I also show a gynecologist, or just a doctor who had been on all kinds of, you know, mainstream news programs, NBC Nightly News and PBS and Oprah Winfrey 10 times and different other programs, because she's just written some great books on women's health. And she says she found the ingredients of the coming vaccines, you know, the mRNA vaccines, did include these tiny nanocrystals that did form circuits in the body, just like these other articles and these other whistleblowers described. And she says, you know, that, and I found the patent that Microsoft had taken out a patent, one such technology, and MIT had showed the technology and how it could work. And how it could basically connect our bodies, our electrical circuits in our bodies that are in these vaccines and these, you know, graphene oxide based hydrogel vaccines with the internet. And that it could actually, she said that they actually could have codes on these, each vaccine, so that we're actually, you know, kind of, part of, like, we're kept track of people that took that got the vaccine, the coronavirus vaccine. So it's really bizarre stuff. But, you know, the question is how much circuitry is in, you know, these vaccines, or how much are they going to try to even, you know, put more kinds of artificial intelligence connected to whatever tiny bits of microscopic circuitry is in us, you know, in the people that took the vaccines. I didn't get vaccinated, but I imagine you did with all your research before too. Now, 25% of the population didn't get vaccinated, according to the CDC in recent studies. But the other 75%, who knows what's inside them and how they're going to use technology, how that technology can, you know, interact with what's inside them. And, you know, during the whole COVID pandemic is when the 5G was pushed on us en masse. That's when all, you know, we were forced inside, we were stuck inside by law. And then we saw, you know, just driving in our neighborhoods, I saw all these, you know, these dishes coming up, the 5G dishes going up during that time. So it definitely seems like there's a transhumanist push. And they've talked about it. The WF, as you said, has talked about it. And the WHO is continually talking about taking over, like superseding nations' own health administrations to push different things such as vaccines. And these vaccines, it's more and more mRNA based vaccines, and more and surely more and more vaccines with hydrogel in it that have this graphene oxide and have these mRNA nanoparticles. And these nanoparticles are, you know, according to studies that came out before the whole COVID experience, these nanoparticles are dangerous. Graphene oxide is very dangerous for our bodies. But the nanoparticles are particularly dangerous for a number of parts of our bodies. You know, according to the Journal of Nanoparticles, they go very quickly into our testes and our ovaries, so they really hurt fertility. You know, sterilizing a lot of women or hurting their babies, and it's really bad for the population. You know, just in that fact alone, with having nanoparticles in the mRNA vaccines.
Yeah, it's a really dangerous path we're going down. Let's wrap up with this. I'm curious about your work in your book on the CIA and the manipulation of society and the influencing of influencers to go down this drug culture route. When you wrote extensively about that, we know that that was sort of a social engineering of sort of convince people tune in, you know, turn on, drop out, all that, that sort of stuff wasn't as authentic as we were led to believe. I wasn't alive in the 60s, but you know, you read about it and you see, you felt, oh, Summer of Love. It just seemed like everybody got together and had this idea. You find now in research that that was manufactured. Knowing what you knew about that, when you saw COVID roll out, were you just seeing overlaps all over the place with the way in which the society was sort of manipulated into supporting something that seemed, that kind of apparently came out of nowhere with the LSD movement, but then was suddenly everywhere? And the same thing with COVID. Did you see the fingerprints of the intelligence apparatus on this scam as well?
I did. And I put a little bit of that, you know, with the overlap with the defense industry in my film, though I think Robert F. Kennedy Jr. does it much more extensively in his, you know, a huge book, which is a fantastic book, The Real Anthony Fauci. He goes, he has a chapter on MKUltra's work, you know, like the MKUltra work and the CIA work, you know, around like that history and the CIA and the way the CIA definitely had its tentacles involved in you know, in deep with influencing and with the whole you know, COVID regime and the vaccines and everything else. And so he does it. I definitely think that he covers that very well. And so yeah, it was so clear, apparent to me. And the way they controlled the message so well and pushed, you know, these pharmaceutical products so intensely. And they had formally done that, of course, you know, they really had done that in an underhanded way, and you know, pretending to be grassroots people, you know, for pushing acid, LSD, and other psychedelics. You know, all these they funded all these grassroots news, you know, supposedly grassroots newspapers, which are really called AstroTurf. It's an AstroTurf campaign, they call it, in the PR industry, the public relations industry. But so that's, they did the same thing, you know, with these, you know, with COVID and the vaccines, and pretending like all these grassroots groups were saying, oh my God, you know, these anti-vaxxers, they all must be, you know, the alt-right and whatever. And really, it's just people of all persuasions and all slants, you know, from all different sides of the political spectrum, which, you know, there's no left and right anymore anyway. But, you know, all sides of the political spectrum, basically, were questioning this stuff. And it just so happened that the you know, some of the right wing mainstream news stations like Fox somehow were allowed to interview Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Alex Berens and some other people, getting some you know, alternative ideas out there, but really what I call some truthful ideas out there about it all. Whereas the you know, what was considered mainstream or left media, such as, you know, CNN or MSNBC, they wouldn't allow any of that. And so it's just the way it all played out. And so that, you know, you could smear, then they could try to smear Kennedy as part of the alt-right, when obviously the Kennedys were illiberals and leftists for, you know, decades. So,
well, there's an old saying that the mouse gets caught in the mousetrap because he can't understand why the cheese is free. And in America, the Americans got caught in the vaccine trap because they couldn't figure out why the donuts were free. And it all kind of came full circle, I think, for us to understand.
Not only free, but they were bribed to eat the donuts, you know, unless they were blackmailed. And you know, and they were penalized if they didn't eat the donuts. They'd lose their job if they didn't eat the donuts. So.
Yeah. First they got the carrot, then they got the stick, you know, and when that didn't work, they tried to demonize us. I think, though, for us to understand COVID, to understand the future COVIDs, because we know that they've hit upon this concept of medical martial law, which is working very well. Why put tanks on the streets when you could just impose people to go in their homes over fear of an invisible enemy that's going to get us? So I think to understand where we were with COVID, where we're going in the future, it's really important to understand the past. And I think that your movie laid that out in a way that you don't have to be a tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy theorist to want to get into this. This is something you can show your parents, the people in your life that think that this is all hocus pocus or that you're out of your mind. No, this has been going on for a long time. You did a fantastic job in the movie. What's the best place for people to find your books, your movies, and support your work?
Yeah, thanks so much, Charlie. You can go to johnpotash.com, johnpotash.com, or shotsmovie.com. You can also find it. It's got several different names, my website, but shotsmovie.com or johnpotash.com, or drugs is also got the name drugsisweapons.com. All lead you to the same site to find where to see, where to buy or rent or see all my films and books and everything and articles.
Not a bad part-time job you got here, John. I know this isn't your day job. You do important doctoral work, but listen, this is I think the way you reach people, especially in this current iteration of us. You got to get the movie in front of their face. And I highly recommend it for people that are interested in it. That's John Potash, everybody. Support his work, support his films, share this episode if you think you like it. And you can follow me on Twitter at Macroaggression, or you can go to my website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. Thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you again later.